Hi, I'm Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. And again, I'd like to thank Tyler and the group for having me come out here and ask me to do this, a talk on 10, 11, and 12. I heard there's at least 700 hours room on the computer worth of recording time, so I think we won't run out. Although don't challenge me. So there was a couple requests beforehand, and I'll try to hit a couple of them before we're done, or all of them before we're done. One of them was somebody wanted to know where everybody was in this process in the Big Book Awakening. I would like to just ask, how many people here have finished the fourth step out of the Big Book Awakening? Wow, right. And how many here have finished six and seven? Okay. How many people here have finished all their amends in the ninth step? All right. Okay. So, how many here have gone through the Big Book Awakening, though, and are now currently working with others? Okay, good. So here's another thought that came to mind, to me. How many people here are currently working with others that have gone through somebody else that has worked with somebody else here? In other words, the third generation down. Right? That's good. All right. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people like to look at six and seven. Some people say, well, they're only two paragraphs. All right. I've heard people say, oh, those are the forgotten steps, right? That's not what I can say, but if you start six from the paragraph before where it talks about reviewing the first five proposals, right, I draw this line through six and seven. Six is becoming, is looking at the first five steps and seeing Dan on his own power. It's just not enough, that I cannot pull off living any other way than the way that I did in the past. And I can't change that. It's not like I'm going to fix anything from the past, like I'm going to remove all of this behavior from the past, right? But I have to be aware of it because I have to know, what do I need to turn to God for help with, right? So I look at the first five proposals, starting at step one, and step two, three, and then each page of that inventory, and I see that if you start six from the paragraph before where it talks about reviewing the first five proposals, right, I draw this line through six and seven. Six is becoming, is looking at the first five steps and seeing Dan on his own power. It's just not enough, that I cannot pull off living any other way than the way that I did in the past. And I can't change that. It's not like I'm going to fix anything from the past, like I'm going to remove all of this behavior from the past, right? But I have to be aware of it because I have to know, what do I need to turn to God for help with, right? So I look at the first five proposals, starting at step one and step two, three, and then each page of that inventory, and I see that I have no other solution, right, except one that will take me to that one of more power. Right? I cannot stay powerless, otherwise nothing's going to change from before. And I become willing, looking at all of this stuff in the first five proposals, to turn to God for help with all of this. Because each step of the way, it's chipped a little bit more off of the idea, chipped off a little bit more of the idea that I can do this on my own, that I can do life on my own without more power, without God. And I come to seven completely willing to turn to God with all of this stuff that I've seen from now on, right? And I've seen people like really anxious to get into 10-11, partly because it just feels a lot better to say I'm in 10-11, right? the trouble is there's nothing worse with committing to doing something that you don't believe in, that you're not really convinced that you really need, right? To get into 10 and 11, not being convinced that I need more power, not being convinced that I need a God in my life, you know, is just in some ways a waste. Yet a lot of people give that to newcomers, and I don't say it's bad. Anything that takes somebody to prayer, anything that encourages somebody to go to God for any reason is good. Having a little trouble talking right now because I had the first tooth ever pulled, and the air is crossing through my teeth in a different way that I'm not used to. So, so anyway, anything that takes somebody to prayer is good. Usually, though, fear is the main thing that takes people to prayer, much more than virtue, right? And I just thought of that because it came up during lunch. So I need to look at all this stuff in the first five proposals as things that, well, that stuff has to take me to a place of desperation, a place of desperation. And when I come to the place where I'm completely willing to turn to God with all of that, that's the thing that's got to be driving sufficiently to that power to get me through the ninth step. Because the ninth step, 8 and 9 doesn't come after 10 and 11, it comes before 10 and 11, right? So that would draw the assumption that I'm supposed to derive a lot of power from 6 and 7. By letting go of any idea that I could do the job on my own, right? And being in a place where I've made this commitment to this relationship with God, to turn to God with all of this stuff. Not from all of the defects from the past, but the defects that I haven't even come to yet from now on, right? Because now I've got an idea of what they look like and how they manifest in my life. Now it's about turning to God for help with this. And I like to talk to that or talk about that. It's like that's a commitment to a relationship, right? A commitment to a relationship. And it's not the kind of commitment to a relationship like you typically hear. When people talk about prayer, they talk about when you get up in the morning, drop to your knees, right? When you go to bed at night, pray. And anybody that's heard me talk about 6 and 7, which there's quite a few over here that have heard this already, but that would be like having a relationship with a man or a woman and getting up in the morning and saying, hello, dear. Ignoring that person all day, and then at night, just saying, "I love you. Good night." You mean so much. You mean so much to me, right? You've done so much in my life. Good night. Completely ignoring the relationship all through the day. That is the way most people do prayer and meditation. Right? Then there's the other way that some people do prayer and meditation, right? And I've been guilty of it myself, right? Look how long I'm sitting in silence. You know, look how great. See how great it feels to be able to sit that long, and to sit long enough to have an out-of-body experience. And I start to see that I'm using prayer and meditation like I drank, because it feels good, right? Yet even prayer and meditation can become selfish because it's something I'm doing for me, right? I need power to live, right? All that stuff is great. All, you know, I don't put any kind of path down. I'm just saying we have a common solution here in the book, right? And it has some specific instructions for me to look at, right? But it starts with me going into this knowing how badly I need God for my life to change, making that commitment to turn to God for everything, for all of this stuff that I find objectionable in my life, that I see that I can't do anything about on my own power, right? And I go to God, again, not out of virtue, but out of desperation. Nothing will change otherwise. And I went through the ninth step, chipping away at all of them that I could do on my own power, till I got far enough down the list. That's that tooth again. Far enough down that list that till I got to the ones that I absolutely saw that I could not make on my own. The ones that had me in so much fear that I was sure that I was carrying this AA thing way too far. And, you know, because I really didn't want to make amends to them all. Now, I'm not talking about the ones necessarily just on the bottom of the list. I'm also talking about the ones that you didn't even write down because you didn't want to even have anybody see that you're not, because you know you're not going to do those, right? See, I've always said my whole life, if this God thing was such a big deal, then why doesn't God prove himself to me, right? If God is so powerful, why can't I get proof that there really is one? And the process of finishing amends becomes so important because it brings me to this place that where self-will can only go so far, and I hit this wall with my own self-will where I see that I absolutely cannot finish this on my own. I cannot make some of those amends. The fear is too great. The consequence is too great. Whatever the excuse, right? I cannot do this on my own power. And I come to this point where, you know, sometimes it's sitting in my car with my head on the steering wheel thinking, I don't want to go in, right? And I see that I cannot do this. I cannot finish the ninth step on my own. And I have to pray into it. And what I see over and over again through those last amends was that the power to get up out of that seat and walk in and make that amends comes. And I can count on it. Right? And I get the proof that I always wanted, that I always needed. That when I go inside and ask for more power, there's more power for me that can get me up out of that seat and drive me to do the things that I see that I cannot do on my own. Right? So 10 and 11 become much different once I've finished amends. It becomes a much deeper experience. You know, sometimes it's sitting in my car with my head on the steering wheel thinking, I don't want to go in. Right? And I see that I cannot do this. I cannot finish the ninth step on my own. And I have to pray into it. And what I see over and over again through those last amends was that the power to get up out of that seat and walk in and make that amends comes. And I can count on it. Right? And I get the proof that I always wanted, that I always needed, that when I go inside and ask for more power, there's more power for me that can get me up out of that seat and drive me to do the things that I see that I cannot do on my own. Right? So 10 and 11 become much different once I've finished amends. Becomes a much deeper experience, right? Because going into prayer and meditation, believing that there's really something there that'll work for me, right? From that perspective, it's a lot different. So, I've heard a lot of things about 10 and 11 from various places. Typically, the term tenth stepping can take various forms in the program. Sometimes it's, do you know what so-and-so did at the meeting? It's really pissing me off. Right? Right? Sometimes it's bordering gossip. Or not just bordering, sometimes it just is gossip. But you're ten-stepping, so it's okay, right? But then on the other hand, you got the sponsor that says, I'm powerless over alcohol and I can't manage my own life, but I want you to call and run everything you do by me. Right? I want you to call me every day, 10-step with me, what's going on? Right? So there's a whole range of different ideas of what the 10-step is about. Certainly anything that gets you into a close relationship, trusting relationship with somebody else that you're willing to talk to is good. Right? But if this whole process has brought me to a place where I see that I cannot rely on myself and my own power and I need something bigger than me, shouldn't the sponsor see that too? So, I hate to talk about some of this stuff because it steps on toes in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? But anything that directs my dependence or reliance on anything other than a power greater than myself is a middle of the road solution. Right? Anything that brings me to a set of instructions that guides me to a place where I think I'm supposed to work on myself or work on something or work on my defects or take me to anything that looks like human power or human aid, a reliance on another human being, it's a middle of the road solution. And there's a fine line between trying to be really helpful to someone that you're working with, because you care, you know, and you want to listen to what they have to say. But at some point, you got to bring it back to a spiritual solution. Right? At some point, you got to redirect what's going on to something more along the lines of what our solution here is. So we took inventory in the fourth step. We looked it over in the sixth step. We looked at the things we found objectionable, right? Saw that we couldn't behave any different on our own power. Become willing to turn to God for help with it, right? So from that perspective, let's read what it says in step 10. On page 84, I think I'll start from the first indented paragraph, right after the promises where it says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And that's work towards clearing away the things that are blocking me from God. Right? And this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and to continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So here it's telling me to take personal inventory, right, obviously. It doesn't say we write it here, though. See, I draw this line between 10 and 11. And what I mean by that is 10 is about watching my behavior. And 11 is about my relationship with God, right? I have to be awake to the things that I'm doing to see what I need to turn to God for help with. I saw that through 4, 5, and 6, right? We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. A lot of you haven't finished amends, but I was told to not start my ninth step until I was halfway, I'm sorry, start 10 and 11 until I was halfway through the ninth step. A lot of people are getting into 10 and 11 faster these days, right? But it's really important not to use 10 and 11 as a distraction, thinking that you don't need to do 9 because you're already in 10 and 11, right? So when I'm working with people, I like them to say that they're in step 8. When somebody asks them. Because if you haven't finished amends and you're doing stuff with prayer and meditation and you haven't become willing to make amends to them all, you're in step 8. Right. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Right? See, that can mean two different things. On one hand, it means I've gotten the ability to go to that place inside, this vast inner landscape that I've never really been able to live from. Right? That's the internal world. But we've also entered the world of the spirit, because if we're in a community like this where everybody's doing the same thing, we're all on a spiritual path, this is also the world of the spirit. Right? All of these generations of sponsorship that are all on the same path that have a different meaning than a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous has when you're talking about living in the fellowship of the spirit, or right, because when or having this common problem and a common solution. A lot of people have the common problem, right? And a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't have a common solution, right? So you can look at this being the world of the spirit as well. You've heard people call these the maintenance steps, right? 10, 11, and 12, right? Here it says, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Right? It doesn't say that we're supposed to maintain anything. Right? Yet, I can't tell you how many people I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous that have decided that this is all Alcoholics Anonymous is. This is all I'm going to get from it. Right? There's no more here for me. I've been here for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. This must be all, this is all there is. Right? And they've put a ceiling on their spiritual growth, thinking that there's nothing more for them. Till they get involved in a group that's doing a little bit more, and all of a sudden that ceiling gets smashed, and you start to realize the infinite nature of this world of the spirit. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So here's the instruction, right? It says we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Does that sound like an inventory? Yeah? It does sound like an inventory. But it doesn't say watch. It doesn't say write. It says watch. Any spiritual practice that I can think of has some sort of mindfulness part of it attached to it. Right? So this is what I consider a mindfulness practice where I'm watching my behavior. And I'm watching for my selfishness, my dishonesty, my resentment or fear to crop up. And it says, when these crop up, not if they crop up, right? They will crop up. You know, I'm sure though that maybe after I've done this for a few more years, maybe they won't, but as of now, they still crop up. It says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them, right? Okay, we don't ask God to remove the person who's in front of us who's pissing us off, okay? It says, we're asking God at once to remove selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. How long, okay, it's rolling back. A lot of you have gone through step one with this, and we looked at the basic idea. First, we looked at the physical problem, right? We lose control when we start, and then we looked at the obsessions that take us to the lack of control, and then the unmanageability of my spirit, that, right? That stuff you looked at in the second half of step one. And what I have to see is just so important for long-term comfortable sobriety. What I have to see is that my spiritual condition, a bad spiritual condition or an unfit spiritual condition, sets up the condition conducive for the obsessions to return. And I drink again, right? It says, so when it says that we watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, how long does it take for a resentment to separate you from a good place? At once, right? At once, it separates you from a good place. Immediately, it separates me from a good place. So, when I continue to watch for those things to crop up, and when they crop up, we ask God at once to remove them, because we don't want to be separated from that place that we've been trying to live in. Right? They're still standing in front of me now, okay? I'm not doing this at home. They're in front of me. I'm going through the day, I'm interacting with people at work, I'm interacting with the family, I'm interacting with my relationships, friends, love relationships, whatever, right? They're standing in front of me. It says, and this thing crops up, we've seen it, and I ask God at once to remove it from me. Right? Hopefully I've had an experience with 4 and 5 and 6, sufficient enough to be mindful of this by the time I've gotten here. Right? It says, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. It doesn't say someone else. It says, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. It doesn't say someone else. It says, we discuss them with someone immediately. Immediately means immediately, right? Right? What are you going to say to the person standing in front of you? Hang on, I got to call my sponsor. Right? Now, situations will vary. Sometimes there's going to be a time gap between when you discuss them with someone at once, right? You might have to stew in it a little bit, right? Some of us make that decision, that choice to sit in a resentment a little while. But there's two ways to read that. I mean, sometimes it could be someone else. But if you don't do it right here in the moment, then there's times when you can consider that maybe you failed to 10 step, right? But there's so many different situations and ways that this could come up that it's going to happen. But I like to read this as we just discuss them with someone immediately because they're standing in front of us. And I make amends quickly before they get away if we've harmed anyone. So I'm moving through the world, moving through my life, watching my behavior, trying to navigate through it without causing more harm. Trying to live by spiritual principles, right? But there's so many different situations and ways that this could come up that it's going to happen. But I like to read this as we just discuss them with someone immediately because they're standing in front of us. And I make amends quickly before they get away if we've harmed anyone. So I'm moving through the world, moving through my life, watching my behavior, trying to navigate through it without causing more harm. Trying to live by spiritual principles. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. It's probably the same someone, because they're still in front of me. Right? How can I help this person? You know, that would depend on the way the interaction looked, what happened between us, right? It says love and tolerance of others is our code. And we want to make this so lofty that we have to come up with really big examples of these really terrible situations that we have to address, right? Yet sometimes it's just so simple. I have a brother. He's got some medical problems. And every time I talk to him, it's like, just through the whole list of stuff that's wrong, and the doctor said this, and the caregiver is, chipping his dishes, and it's like, and I find myself losing patience with him, right? It's like, a couple times is okay, but I call him 2 or 3 times a day, right? And it's the same conversation, right? And sometimes I let him know, yesterday, in fact, I says, you sound just like grandma. And when I said it, I just had to break out laughing, partly because I wanted him to think I was being funny. But this has kind of been ongoing. It's a constant struggle to live with someone in that way, to continually have communication with someone who's always going to a place that drags you down, right? And I find myself having to watch my behavior, right? I mean, why wouldn't you? My brother's probably the person in the world that I care the most about, right? Why wouldn't I make that relationship important to me? Right? It's a simple thing, right? I don't have to wait for any big 10, 11 experiences to say, look what I've done. Sometimes it's just the little things that keep you on track, right? Is there anybody here that sails?
Yeah.
You know, it, it if just the wind changes direction, if the eye of the wind moves, you could go all completely off course if you're, you know, the boat balance gets thrown off, or if someone's on the tiller and they're drinking too much and they're just not, keeping focused on the compass. Okay, we want to go this way, you know, and then you look, you figure out where you're at, and you realize that he was going that way, and it's like, you know. Anyway, a mindfulness practice is designed to keep me awake to the way that I'm living, while I'm living it, while I'm doing it, because I want to try to stay on track here and not get too far off course. And it kind of just becomes that. You know, you would know. I mean, this might be over some people's heads. You know, if everybody sits down on the sailboat and they're sitting in the right, in certain places, doesn't matter where they're sitting, you adjust the sails just perfectly for the eye of the wind. You can practically let go of the tiller, right? Because it'll just balance, keeps its balance, and it just goes. But what you've got is the eye of the wind keeps moving. You got the waves crashing against the boat, throwing it off course. You got drift, which is the current underneath the boat, pulling it another direction, right? And then you got the people that keep wanting to go down into the cabin for beers or sodas or potato chips or to use the head, which throws the balance of the boat off. So it's all over the place, and you're constantly having to correct the situation, the sails, the rudder, all this stuff to keep on course. And it's just like that here, right? As I move through the day, I'm constantly going to be having to correct to bring me back to that place, that ideal place, right? I can't do anything about this stuff that's going on around me, the people at work, the relationship, the person that turned left in front of me, all this stuff is going on around me that's knocking me off course, right? And I want to practice just pulling back right into center, right? Same thing when this incident happened with my brother. You know, I wanted to leave the conversation laughing with him, not angry, right? It says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, right? Have I ceased fighting anything and everyone? Right? Even if you can say yes now, it doesn't mean you can say yes tomorrow. Right? No more than you can tell the eye of the wind to stop moving. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. Remember back on page 24, Bill uses the description of insanity is like touching a hot stove over and over again. But here, it's saying, if tempted, recoil from it as from a hot flame. Right? I've been given a way to look at my life. I've been given a way to look at my behavior. Right? I've looked over my behavior and I've seen the parts that I find objectionable, and I see that I cannot do anything about that on my own. I've come to a place where I see that if I'm resentful, there's always a fourth column. Right? So how important is it to hang on to the third? Right? Even though most of us live in a third column society, right? For me, it's deadly. It says we react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. So when it's talking about reacting sane and normally, right? I look at that, certainly if I can react sane and normally with the people around me, it goes a long way to reacting sane and normally while I'm walking down the liquor aisle at the grocery store. But there definitely is a connection between those two, right? Because if I allow myself to fall back into that place of darkness, that place of mindlessness about my behavior, right? Then my spiritual condition gets affected, right? And from that place, I'm in danger of the obsessions returning, right? And sometimes the obsession—it's not the obsessions for alcohol or drugs or the original problem you're looking at. sometimes initially that the problems kind of manifest in other ways around your life. Well, I can't drink anymore, so I'm just going to do this, right? And I have to see that there could be connections between my spiritual condition and how I'm living. Says we will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It was only the first half of the first step that was about alcohol for me. The rest has all been about convincing me that I have this spiritual condition that I can't do anything about. Right? Very little of the thought and effort was actually on how to overcome alcohol, how to fight alcohol. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we're afraid. That is our experience. That's how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So how are you going to react if you don't stay in fit spiritual condition? Right? It just tells me how I'm going to react if I do. Right? So if I don't, then I won't be in this place it's talking about. Right? Again, I'm repeating this, but how long does it take for resentment to separate you from a good place? At once. So it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Right? A laurel is like the wreath they put on a winning horse. Right? And they praise him for this great race that it just ran. Right? Got some old timers like that I've seen. You know, look at how much time I've got. Right? We were talking about it at lunch. Right? I'd rather see somebody with 9 months who's finished amends and is in 10, 11, and 12 working with people than someone with 30 years that wants to talk about all the shitty things in their life. Right? So, you know, hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous so dry they're fire hazards. Not... Now, I don't know any of you, so it's not directed towards anybody here, of course. Plus, I know a lot of you are doing a lot more work. So, but what if you stop doing the work? Right. Yeah. It's how we react so long as we don't keep in spiritual condition, right? It says we are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I bet a lot of people have been confused in the past of how in the beginning of the book it says we recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And here it says we are not cured of alcoholism. You guys been confused about that?
No.
No? That's what happens when you're speaking to the choir. I will say it anyway, because I know that some people, right. We looked at the program from three perspectives. Primarily, from the very beginning of the book, we looked at the circle and the triangle, and we looked at the body, mind, and spirit, and the physical craving, the obsessions, and the unmanageability in step one. My physical alcoholism is I lose control of alcohol, even in spite of all the consequences. Right? That's my physical alcoholism. As long as I don't ever drink again, I'll never have the physical consequences from drinking too much. The second part is the obsessions. Right? It's my mental alcoholism, my alcoholic mind. It's the obsessions that take me to alcohol. It doesn't mean anything else but that. It's not it's not an excuse for my bad behavior sober, right? It's only an excuse for my behavior drink and why I go back to drinking. My alcoholic mind is the obsession that takes me back to that drink after a period of sobriety. If I'm not suffering that obsession, not just the thought of drinking, but the obsession to drink that outweighs any logic. If I'm not suffering from that, then I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Right? But they've left something out in the beginning of the book. Because here it says, we're not cured of alcoholism, and that's the spiritual side of alcoholism. The part we looked at in the second half of step one, the unmanageability, right? The spiritual malady that sets up the condition conducive for the obsessions of my mind to return. And that's true when you're new. That can happen when you're new. It can also happen with 10 years or 20 years or 30 years of recovery, right? Some people, you've probably heard them in meetings, they need a drink. Right? You know, and some can live that way, and some can't. If you're going to take away my medicine, you're going to give me something that's better. You got to give me something that I want, that I need to be comfortable. Right? One of the things that Bill talks about, you know, you've probably heard that he did experiments with like vitamin B3 and LSD and all that stuff. That was before LSD was recreational. He said that alcohol, it was with a group of people that were all like in an experiment. I think what I read that Bill was the one that was more excited about the group staying together than some of the others. They dropped off, said, we can't do this anymore. But Bill had the idea that people have the desire to transcend themselves, an inner yearning to transcend themselves, especially an alcoholic. Right? What I could relate to when I drink, liking who I was better with alcohol than without alcohol. Right? Because alcohol brought me to a place beyond who I was. Right? And somehow I get the delusion, which is insanity, that a drink still sounds nice. Right? Now, it's not to say I'm ready to drink. It's not to say I even want to drink. It's only to say I wish I could get away with it. And not have the consequences, not have, you know, not have to give up my time. Right? Right, there is a part of me deep down inside that's still there, and I believe that if I fall back into a spiritual dysfunctional place, spiritually dysfunctional place, that the obsessions to drink can return. Some of you have been so angry that you've wanted to drink. Some of you have been so upset about a situation that the thought of wanting to drink comes to you. You may not have drank, right? But there's something still there in a real alcoholic that doesn't get, we don't get cured of. Right? So we're not cured of our alcoholism, the spiritual part of our alcoholism. It says what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Right? So when people say, I'm so-and-so, I'm a recovered alcoholic, doesn't quite mean as much when you look at it from this perspective. What is your spiritual condition today? Right? And it's all hinged upon me being awake to my behavior and how I move through the day and what I do, right, during my interactions with the world. Right? Watching for these things to crop up, watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Right? It says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. So now, we're talking about God here, but remember I said I draw a line in between step 10 and 11. 10 is about me watching my behavior. Right? They're talking about me watching or being awake to the idea that I've made this commitment to bring God into my life. Not just in the morning, not just at night, right, but into my day. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. Right? This is not about God here. This is about me seeing and acknowledging that I said, I need God. I need more power in my life. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. Right? Exercising my willpower along the lines where I know without a doubt that I still need God. Right? You can see where that line can get blurred. Right. Much has been already said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed these directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. We have five physical senses, right? I always leave out one. What is it? Sight, smell, touch, hearing. Sight, smell, touch. Taste, right? I believe that what I saw, I could trust, or what I heard, I could trust. Hasn't my inventory showed me something different? That what I see and how I perceive things through what I hear or what I see or what I sense through my physical senses are not always accurate. Right? But here they're talking about a vital sixth sense, a God consciousness. I've always had so much reliance on what I could see, what I could touch, as what I to be what I needed to be okay. And they always, all of them fell short. Right? So what it's talking about here is starting to have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. Right? I saw that after finishing amends, that there's a power that can come and enter into my life that can move me beyond myself and my own limitations. Right? As I begin to trust that, right, prayer becomes much easier. Right, when I really believe it can work for me. Right? Again, if I would never have finished amends, I would never have gotten there to the degree that I'm at. But after each big section, it follows with something like this. It says, but we must go further, and that means more action. Hasn't that been the way this process has seemed all along? Haven't I done enough? So whereas 10 is about me being mindful to my behavior, watching as I move through the day in all my interactions, 11 is about building and deepening my relationship with God. And I do that through accessing that power. Right? Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. Now you can get way off when you start talking about what is the definition of prayer. Because if you go to a dictionary, there could be two or three pages. The bigger the dictionary, the more pages there'll be on prayer. Right? So you have to look to the context that it's being used in. And in this context, prayer simply means asking God. Now, meditation has taken on all sorts of meanings. Right? And it's thrown out of context greatly in Alcoholics Anonymous. Prayer simply means directed thought. If it's silent meditation, I'm directing my thoughts to silence. Right? If it's, whatever precedes the word meditation will give you some idea of what it's about. But in this case, you have to look to the context that it's used in. And the way it's used, I believe, it's a contemplative meditation. Right? To turn my thoughts to contemplation. To consideration. It says we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Now, they're not talking about shy meaning like afraid. Shy is like 11 is one short of a dozen. All right? Shouldn't be short on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. All right? It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Right? If you don't have the right attitude towards prayer and meditation, then it won't work. And if you don't work at it, it won't work. Right? It would be easy to be vague about this matter. Well, that's good to know, because I want it to work. I want the right attitude, and I want to work at it. So they believe that they can give us some definite and valuable suggestions. Right? It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. It says, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? There's another inventory there, right? Right? So the question was once posed to me early on is, what's the difference between watching for selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment and fear, and were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? I say if you're writing inventory at night, you fail to do the 10th step. It says were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? There's another inventory there, right? Right? So the question was once posed to me early on is, what's the difference between watching for selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment and fear, and were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? I say if you're writing inventory at night, you fail to do the 10th step. And I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, it's not ideal, you know, but it happens. I mean, it's, you know, it's a practice. You know, you're going to fail to do the 10th step. That's why we have the nightly review. That's what it's for. Is it gives me another opportunity to scan my day and consider my behavior. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? These are all things about my behavior, right? Right? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, or what we could pack into the stream of life? Right? It's asking me to just look at my behavior. I've seen the lists. I've gone through it, tried to do a nightly thing and answer each question specifically, and you can only do it for so many days in a row. And your eyes just cross, and you just don't want to do it, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, because it's a great way to learn what's in here, right? I think mixing it up is good, right? But year after year, it can get monotonous. Just the understanding that what it's saying is that it's asking me here to consider, how well did I 10 step today? That's what it's saying. How well did I 10 step today? Because if I've done any of this stuff, I failed to watch my behavior. I failed to bring God into the situation, right? And I've carried the resentment or dishonesty or selfishness all the way through the day, and just now I'm reviewing my day, and now I'm looking at it, and it's still on me. It's still with me, right? It's still taking up some space in my mind, and it's might be just a little thing, right? But if I continue to live like that, soon there'll be another little thing, and then another, and then another, and then you're sitting there going, I don't know what happened. I was in such a good place back then. Can anybody relate to that? Right. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. Right? Again, I said, if I'm not watching this behavior and I'm not turning to God for help with all of this stuff, right, then I'm ignoring the commitment to the relationship that I made back in the seventh step, right? And that would explain the next sentence. It says, after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Right? I'm asking God's forgiveness because I've ignored the commitment to the relationship that I made. Again, what if you forgot to say good morning to your mate and good night at the end of the day and ignored her all during the day, right? Right? Would you have to ask her forgiveness? Flowers and gifts would probably help too, right? Right. Yeah. So here, that's how I look at where it says we ask God's forgiveness. It's because I'm ignoring the commitment to the relationship that I said that was so important to me. Right? So on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. It's on page 86 if anybody's trying to follow along and is wondering about it. We consider our plans for the day. Now, I'm on a set regimen. I know what I'm going to do when I wake up next Friday, right? So you'd say, well, why would I want to consider my plans for the day? Why would that pertain to me if I'm on a schedule? You get up, take a shower, go to work, right? Spend all day at work, and you come home, do whatever you do, and go to sleep. That's my plans. Why do I need to consider them? Life has considered my plans for me, right? Well, watch this, right? The first time that I really considered my behavior with my brother was actually in a nightly review. When I looked over my day, right, prayed about it. One of the meditations I actually use is I go back to page 52 in the 11th step and use the bedevilments section as a prayer. Did I remember to bring God into all my relationships today? Did I remember to bring God into my emotional condition, my emotional natures today? Right. Go through all of those things on that page and consider, did I bring God into all of these areas in my life today? And, you know, I got to the first part. Did I bring God into all of my relationships today? And it was glaring. Obviously, I was noticeably impatient with my conversations with my brother. Right? So, looking at that, I didn't necessarily have to write inventory on it because it wasn't about his behavior; it was about my behavior, right? Because I understand that he's going through a lot, and I do want to be there for him, because if we can't have that kind of relationship, then it would be based on my selfishness, right? Anyway. Now I've got something to consider for my plans for the day. Right? Right? So my plan for the day was, every time I talk to my brother during the day, I'm going to pray and ask God to give me the patience, kindness, loving, the love, the tolerance, whatever it takes to be the brother that I want to be to him. That's my plan for the day. Right? Right? So that kind of changes it a little bit. It gives you really something to work with and something that I can grab a hold of. This is what I do, right? This is the behavior that I see, right? Just like in the fourth step and the fifth step and sixth step. This is what I see is objectionable about my behavior. I see that I can't behave any different on my own power, right? And I'm willing to turn to God for help with this, right? Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, right? That's the same thing as what it said over here when it says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We ask God to direct our thinking. Asking God is prayer, directed thought is meditation. Especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, right? I could fall into this thing, it's like, Why doesn't he realize I've already heard all this before? Why doesn't he, you know? I can validate why he should stop bringing all this stuff into our conversation, right? But obviously that's self-pity and self-seeking motives, right? Again, this is so simple. This is just a real simple thing. It's not anything earth-shattering. It's just my relationship with my brother, right? Right? Yet, when you put it in perspective and that it is one of the most important relationships in my life, next to God, right? It's a big deal. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Right?